Hello, folks. Thank you for joining Christ Church at Grove Farm's Sermon Podcast. We hope you find these messages insightful and inspirational. If you would like more information about Christ Church at Grove Farm, or would like to connect with one of our pastors, staff, or ministry leaders, I encourage you to visit our website, ccgf.org. May God bless your study of the Word. Grace and peace to you.
You know, it's great. These pageants, you know, that kids do, they're really cute. The truth of the matter is, the first Christmas was a lot different. In fact, I would suggest, and you've already heard Mike read the passage, the first Christmas speaks even louder than any kind of pageant we could put together. So let's do this. Let's go to the Gospel of Luke. This is in the New Testament. And here we find the account of the birth of the Son of God, the Messiah, Jesus Christ. It's worth reading this again because it's really profound what we read in just a few verses. So go there with me. You'll see the words on the screens here, and you could follow along as we read this. Let's take a look at it. It says, "In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria, and everyone went to their own town to register. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and the line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child." Let's pause there for a moment. I want you to notice something. Whenever we read the narrative, the account of the birth of Jesus Christ, it does not begin with the words, "once upon a time." This is not a fairy tale. This is not fiction. It's history. It's history. And it's written in a very specific way that tips us off that this is a historical account. I mean, check out the very first words. "In those days, Caesar Augustus." Stop there. That's a timestamp. Saying Caesar Augustus is like saying when Bill Clinton was president or when George Bush was president. It places it in time. Caesar Augustus, a person that much history has been written of, is someone who's prominent in this account. And everything that happens with Jesus happened at that time. Now, Caesar Augustus is an interesting character. Caesar Augustus was a guy who came to power in a bloody way. Caesar Augustus was a person in history who did a lot of good. But he took it a little too far, in my opinion, because Caesar Augustus claimed to be, this was self-proclaimed, he claimed to be deity. He claimed that he was a god. And despite the fact that, as I said, he did some good things and he made life better for people, there was still a sense of want in humanity. There was still a longing. A political savior, even a self-appointed one, couldn't really meet the deepest needs of people. And so I want you to note what God does in this passage because it's amazing. You know, 700 years before the birth of Jesus, God prophesied, foretold that Jesus was going to be born in a very specific place, Bethlehem. 700 years before it actually happens. And so think about what's happening here in this story that has this timestamp on it. God handpicks a couple. Young girl, young guy, who are from, not Bethlehem, but where? Nazareth. They're from Nazareth. But in order for the prophecy to be fulfilled, they need to get to Bethlehem. So what does God do? He influences, because he can do whatever he wants, the most powerful person in the world, who evidently is able to snap his fingers and say everyone needs to go to their hometown for a census. And because of that, Mary and Joseph go to their hometown, the place where Joseph's family was from, which happens to be the city of David, Bethlehem. And what happens while they're there? Well, Jesus was born. Look, this is those details, just what I've shared with you, that's mind-blowing. And you know what it tells us? That God is very much the ruler of all history. And I'll tell you this, he is still active and he is still moving in this world. In fact, he is moving and acting tonight, right now. And the thing that I would say, this God who is over all history, our lives, your life, is in his hands. Which, by the way, is a very good place to be. And so understand the setting. This is history. If you think that somehow this is a fairy tale, think again. Real person, real time, time stamp on it, Jesus is born. Now let's read a little more here. I want you to see verses 6 and 7. There are some really interesting details here that I think point us to something very important. Check it out. In verse 6, while they were there, the time came for the baby to be born. And she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them. Okay, so let's understand, you know, the pageants are cute, but they do not capture the earthy realness of the first Christmas. Take Mary. We tend to picture Mary as this very serene figure, clean white linens, glowing orb over her head. Listen, Mary was very much likely bone weary. I mean, she was tired. She had made a long journey from Nazareth to Bethlehem on the back of an animal, or maybe she walked a portion of that at the very least. She was tired. And the other thing you need to know about Mary is that Mary was a peasant girl. She was young. And in fact, if we were to see a girl her age, pregnant, about to give child, we'd be uncomfortable. That's how young she was. And you know, the glowing orb, man, she was in a stable, probably her long hair down, giving birth to a child in that environment. She probably had straw through her hair. And what she was wrapped in, likely, can you imagine, dirty cloaks, dirty blankets. This is the situation. It's far different than the manger scene that we picture, that we envision. This is a desperate situation. In my mind, it's the kind of situation that you would see like under a bridge somewhere on the outskirts of town. That's the scene. It's not what you picture under your Christmas tree. Something very different. And in the midst of all this, it says that Mary wrapped him in clothes, or swaddling clothes, we read sometimes. By the way, these were rags. What the baby Jesus, the Son of God, was first dressed in were filthy rags that were lying around, scraps. And that's how the story begins. And then in verse 7, I want you to see verse 7 again here. Verse 7, it says this. It says that she wrapped him in cloths and placed him where? In a manger. In a manger. And there's things to pay attention in the scriptures. In the scriptures, three times in a very short span of verses, that phrase, in a manger, shows up again, again, and again. And I think whenever you see something show up like three times like that, you got to pay attention to that. Through those words, God's seeking to get our attention in a manger. You know, a manger may have looked something like this, constructed of wood. It may have been made of stone. Regardless of what it was constructed of, here's what the manger was. The manger was a feeding trough. This was a place where scraps of food were placed so that horses and donkeys and cattle could eat. And in my imagination, I think Mary and Joseph, being exhausted from bearing a child, found themselves with nowhere to lie Jesus, and out of desperation, they put him in the manger. They just need to put him somewhere. That's the scene we're talking about. And I think the manger points us to something very important. You may wonder, what's it point us to? The manger points us to self-sacrificing love. Self-sacrificing love. I want you to contrast this with the guy we talked about, Caesar Augustus. Caesar Augustus, in his time, was as famous as anyone in the ancient world. Fame, power, he had all that. And Caesar Augustus came to power in a very bloody way. Some of you know history well. And you know that there was a lot of bloodshed that led to him becoming what he proclaimed himself to be, the emperor. Caesar Augustus was the kind of guy who would never, ever go to a place like Bethlehem. That was beneath him. But Jesus, the Son of God, the King of eternity, wasn't born in a golden cradle in a palace. And though he would come to power, he did not conquer through the shed blood of others. No, Jesus came to power. He conquered by shedding his own blood. That's the kind of self-sacrificing love the manger points us to. Listen, the manger points us to a way of life. And here's something else the manger tells us. It tells us that God is very much at home with the messy, you know? Messy things. Our family enjoys the music of Christmas. I'm sure you do too. And throughout the month, you know, we listen to our favorite songs. We got a long playlist. My youngest daughter, Lainey, really enjoys the music. I think she enjoys it as much as anyone. In fact, she's already like sad that soon it'll be time to stop playing the Christmas music. She loves it so much. And most of our songs are the joyful, jolly songs, you know. But this year we added one song to the playlist that is by an artist that she likes. But the song deals with themes of sadness and pain in the midst of a season. I think a lot of people feel that. And it's interesting. When that song comes on, Lainey wants us to skip it. She doesn't like it. And you know, I think what she doesn't like is that the idea of sadness at Christmas just doesn't feel right to her. It feels uncomfortable. And I think a lot of us feel that same way. I think, you know, though we may be dealing with our own degree of pain or disappointment or whatever it might be, that we want to turn away from that. We really don't want to look at it in the eyes, face to face. But here's the thing. The manger tells us that Jesus is very much comfortable in the messy, in the things that aren't neatly put together. And so here's what I would say to you. You can bring to Jesus your pain, your disappointment. You can bring to Jesus the hurts you have. The things that you wish were different in this life. And here's what you could do. You can place them in the manger. Because Jesus is very much comfortable. This is what the manger points us to. He's very much comfortable with the messy things of this world. Look, the manger is step one on the journey, Jesus' life, 33 years, the journey to the cross. It's interesting. Jesus' life starts low, and it actually goes lower. Because the way that the Savior saves is that he goes from infinite deity, God, and he comes to be in a feeding trough and ultimately ends up at the torment of the cross. The manger points us to something, and I think we have to pay attention to that. But there's another thing in this verse 7 that I think is very important that we should see also. Let's look at verse 7 again. This time I want to show it to you in the King James Version, a different translation. I read to you from one translation, but now see it in a different translation. Here's how it reads. It says, she brought forth her firstborn son, wrapped him in, there it is, swaddling cloths, and laid him in the manger, right? Why? Because there was no room for them in the inn. That's a familiar phrase, isn't it? No room in the inn. You hear that this time of year, hear that really any time of year. And we think about this, and it sounds like somehow that maybe Joseph or maybe God forgot to make reservations at the hotel. It sounds like that, but that's not it at all. This is all very intentional. There aren't accidents with the God who's the God over whose history. And really, though this translation says that there was no room in the inn, the best translation, the better translation, is the one we read earlier, that it was a guest room. You see, in those days, there would have been like peasants, these people that Jesus, his family, his earthly family, they were poor people. And just like today, when people come and visit their relatives at Christmas time, because of the census, Joseph and Mary were going to Bethlehem, and they were likely going to stay with relatives there. Now, these relatives, again, were peasants, and their house wasn't that big. And so the other relatives had maybe taken the other places to sleep, and so they sent, and it seems really inconsiderate, a pregnant woman and her husband to stay in a stable. And this stable would have been a part of their home on the ground floor, a little space where the animals, who were very valuable to them, could be brought into the evening, out from the cold, to eat and to feed. And so this is the place where Jesus was born, a stable. And as we think about the idea of a spare room or an inn even, it strikes me, even when I think about my own life, that most of us don't have room in the inn of our lives for Jesus. We have no room. Our hearts are crowded. You know, even now, as I'm speaking to you, many of us have crowded hearts, crowded with details. You got plans tonight. You got a meal to share, some fun things ahead of you. Some of the guys are panicking because they still have to buy gifts for their wife, you know, that they haven't done yet. So the details, your heart's crowded with that kind of thing. You might be crowded with doubts. That you come into a place like this and you hear the story of the birth of Jesus and you got so many questions. And so your heart is crowded with doubt. It could be that your heart's just crowded with discontent. That there's something in your life that just doesn't feel right. You wish that it was different. It might be that you have fear or sadness. That you're afraid of the way that things are going to turn out. You look ahead to a new year and you think, man, I've got fears about that. Or maybe it's sadness. Sadness about the way things have turned out to this point in your life. You might be angry. I don't know what it is. But here's what I would encourage you to do this Christmas. That you would invite Jesus into the room of your life. Right there. With the doubt, the discontent, the anger, the details. Invite Jesus into the room of your life, that space. And here's the thing. Jesus will come and sit with you in that space. The clutter, the mess, the dirt, the filth. He's not afraid of it. That's what the manger and the stable points out to us. I want to give you a practical way that you can do this Christmas. Two ways. There's a lot of ways that you can make space for the Lord. Here's one. So we've got these Gospels of Luke. I read to you from Luke here. And this is just a singular copy of the book of Luke, just one book of the Bible. And I would love to give you this as a free gift. Pastor Mike and I will be in the Minton Commons at the Welcome Center. And this is a way you can make space for Jesus, to read the Word of God. And if you'll open yourself up to the Word, here's what will happen. God will talk to you. He'll meet you in this place. He will speak to you right in the middle of whatever it is that you're carrying. You can make space for God by reading the Word. That's one way. Here's another way. In our church family, we have been focusing on spreading goodwill during this Christmas season. And the idea is that we would share the love, reflect the love of God through Jesus to our neighbors, to the people in our circles, people we know, people we don't know. And so people have done things like bake a plate of cookies for a neighbor and write a little note and give them this card, which leads them to some steps. Or others have bought a cup of coffee for someone and given them this card. We're not doing these things to try to earn brownie points with God. That's not the point. We can't do that. The point is to reflect the love, the grace that God has shown us through Jesus. And so we go and we spread that goodwill. We reflect that love in hopes that people will feel the love that we felt through him. And so like this one guy went to the grocery store, saw a woman, she was on crutches, she looked like she was having a tough time, and he paid for her entire grocery bill. And she actually wrote to us and told us about this. You can make room for Jesus. You'll experience him if you do something like that for someone. Grab some of these goodwill cards. Maybe that's a way you can make space. There's a lot of ways. But I will tell you this, no matter what you do to make space, in the manger, you will find the only way to be right with God. There is no other person. There is no other path. There's no like self-salvation system that you can buy into. We trick ourselves into thinking that's true. That doesn't work. There's just Jesus. Just him. And listen, when you make room for Jesus, when you've got manger faith, God will bless you. He's going to bless you with every spiritual blessing. You're adopted into his family, one of his kids. You can experience forgiveness of sins, the worst sins that you could possibly imagine. You have an inheritance that's eternal. You have everything you need through Jesus. And so I ask you tonight, will you make room for Jesus? You know, I think a lot of us think that somehow we're disqualified from knowing God, from knowing Christ. But here's the reality. This is what the manger says. This is what the stable says to us. It says to us that God will actually meet you right in the place where you think you've been disqualified. That's how God works. And so the very quality in you that you think makes you least spiritual, the very quality that you think keeps you distant from God, that becomes the meeting place for you and for the God of the universe. Okay, so we are invited, each of us, you are invited this Christmas to make room for Jesus. Make space for him. Don't let anything disqualify you from that. The baby, the king who was born in a manger, in a stable, invites you to come just as you are. He's already there. At the top of the service, we sang one of the most familiar Christmas carols, and I think it's a fitting way to conclude this message. I want to sing it over you. Joy to the world, the Lord has come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare him room. And heaven and nature sing, and heaven and nature sing, and heaven and nature sing. Prepare him room. Give Jesus space. That's the wonder of Christmas. I pray that you will do that and experience the goodness of just Jesus this Christmas. There's no better way to celebrate the holidays.